This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Same. Well, we kind of do.
So we haven't aged a bit.
I think Don needs to do a show with two of us sometime.
Okay.
Like, two sisters, three sisters, who cares? Well, you're both, Rita and Wendy, I mean, some of the funniest comic actresses in Portland with impeccable timing, sharp wit, and it's great to see you both in this triangle show, 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother. And it's a silly question, but are either of you Jewish?
I'm Jewish.
You're Jewish.
I'm very Jewish.
You're very Jewish.
Oh, yeah.
She's Jewish enough for the both of us.
Yes,
so
I
you've
am.
Been teaching Rita.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, just hanging out with me, it rubs off on her.
Does it?
Oh, yeah. She's been insecure, filled with guilt, hungrier than usual.
That sounds Asian to me, but
semi-depressed. Yeah, she's doing great.
There are some things that are so universal when it comes to moms and daughters.
She's worrying
exactly.
more.
Yeah.
It's good.
She's worrying more?
Oh, that's funny.
So it sounds like, you know, that you're relating to this material. This is like made for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wonderful material, actually. Usually, well, many times I write my own things, but this is just made for us. You know, Judy Gold wrote it.
Yeah, 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother. Judy Gold, an Emmy Award-winning writer and producer of The Rosie O'Donnell Show.
Right.
She co-wrote it with Kate Moira Ryan, her former partner.
Right, exactly.
And Judy performed it originally as a solo show, but you're doing this as two people, but with other characters as well. So is it a mom and daughter and other characters?
Yeah, it is. Wendy is playing a multitude of characters brilliantly, including my mother. And
Rivka,
if you read the Bible.
Yeah.
And it's just really, it's beautiful because, you know, there are, no matter what culture you're from, there are universal things that happen between moms and daughters.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it doesn't really matter what culture you are.
It really
because
doesn't.
That relationship is just one of the... most complex.
And it's a firecracker.
It
know?
Is.
So it's been great fun.
We've had a lot of people come to see the show that absolutely, I mean, loved it. We've had the most wonderfully kind and people are just, they're delicious. You know, at the end, we come out and talk to them. And a lot of them are not Jewish, but I think a mother is a mother, you know. And
a daughter's a daughter.
That's right.
And there's issues. And some of our issues are, you know, frivolous and funny and hilarious. And some of the subjects that the show deals with are a lot deeper. And so don't you think, Rita, that...
Yeah, it's like a parfait. It's very layered. There's a lot of stuff going on. And, you know, and I think there's a nice rhythm to it. You get into deep things and then you see the humor in them. And it's a nice wave, I think.
And also, the thing that I found really interesting and the thing that our director, Don Horn, really stressed was finding, I mean, he's wonderful in this way that he digs and he finds the absolute truth. Mm-hmm. And Rita and I are very organic actors. We don't do the, you know, put on a costume and that's who you are, the physical stuff. It all has to be intellectually understood. And so there's a lot to the show. I mean, Judy Gold is an Orthodox Jew. She has a partner. She has two children. She is a lesbian. She comes from New York.
And she really fought and clawed her way through a business that was largely male populated back when she started.
Exactly. So she did this this interview with all these women, asking them questions about being a Jewish mother.
Yeah, she did 50 interviews.
Yeah.
About what it's like to be a Jewish mom, but also probably what it's like to be a Jewish mother. A daughter as well?
Or
is it all from mom's
perspective? Well, sure, because you talk about this because you're the daughter. Really.
Yeah.
You're the Judy Gold character.
I am. I'm interpreting Judy's story. And, you know, I think what happens is in these questions, you know, she's going through changes in her life and it sort of informs the questions that they come up with. But what's interesting is she finds out a lot about herself. So I think that's, when I was reading the book, that's what I found is that she'd give you snippets of those interviews, but it was also an insight into her.
Right.
Oh, so
and
fascinating.
And the show is written as a one-person show, but I cannot play a 40-year-old, redheaded, really tall, Orthodox Jewish lesbian because I'm old and shriveled
and
Jewish
personal
and
show
I have white hair. Yeah, so Rita is just brilliant. Oh, and she's brilliant, and she feeds me, and I feed her, and it's a total love fest.
Wendy is totally brilliant. I'll just say that.
Oh.
It is a love fest.
Oh, well, yeah, I was going to ask.
No,
if
we're just ridiculously in love with each other.
Have you ever worked together before?
No.
Well, we did that one.
What do we do?
That one little sketch that we did, but we've never done a show.
No, we never
did. Never done a show
we've
together.
Never done a show together. But we met each other when she was just a little pitzel. How old were you, Rita?
I was probably, it was like 21 years ago.
So you were in your 20s.
I can't do that much math, but
that's ridiculous. And I did it was a benefit, and I had done a character that I had done for Recovering for Myself, Zumi, the Vietnamese nail lady, and she and I met then, and just, I loved her. She was just darling, you know? And this is the best.
So you feel like in some ways very maternal towards Rita, because you've known her since she was a little pup.
Oh, I feel totally maternal towards her.
She texts me if I don't return her call fast enough because she's worried.
Oh no. Well, that's very endearing. I mean, Rita, even though, you know, I consider myself a pretty good actor, I think I'd be very honored, but a little intimidated to be working
with Wendela,
such an icon as Wendy Westerwelle.
You know, I don't feel intimidated.
Very beginning, how did it feel?
Well, you know, she's just been so loving and giving and generous that I really didn't feel intimidated. I feel there's a big responsibility to stand next to her, if that's a different thing. You know,
you got to bring your A game.
I got to bring the goods every night. So there's that. So that's part of it's a little nerve-wracking, but also really exciting.
But that's challenging in a good way, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. My guests are Wendy Westerwelle and Rita Parrish from Triangle Productions' 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother, which runs through February 24th, and you can find out more at tripro.org or stageandstudio.org. So how did you develop your stage relationship? You sound like you've really done, you know, home the mother-daughter relationship.
You say, Rita. You say.
Well, one thing that I did was I actually read the book that the play was based on, and that gave me a little more insight into Judy and what she was going through. So that was helpful to me. And I think with Wendy, you know, we are the same. I mean, we are the same. Our process is the same. Right. Our temperaments are the same. You know, well, that's not true.
What do you mean? What are you saying? What's different about our temperaments?
You are much calmer than me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm on medication.
But so
I go to temple now. I pray a lot. So
she does.
You're just mellow.
I'm just mellow.
Yeah. She might fall asleep any second.
I'm not the rhino that I used to be.
But Wendy, wouldn't you say that we talked a lot about it?
Oh, yeah, we did. And, you know, Rita and I met by ourselves. We met a lot. We talked a lot.
You hung out together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and we always will. Yeah. I mean, that's what she says. I'm already having anxiety. We got 10 more shows, and I'm thinking, oh, face, man.
What if she has
a life now? I'm going to get aggravated. But you know, the thing is, there's clues within the script. Because Judy has this major thing with her mom, Ruth. And
what is their relationship like?
Well, it's...
It's loud, it's noisy, it's full of love, they fight, it's just, it's very
And her mom drives
real.
Her crazy, but she's crazy for her mom, you know? Our people are really intense. And she finds out things about Ruth that she didn't know, that her mother wanted to be a stand-up comedian. You know, her mother says, "My name is Ruth Rifka, if you read the Bible, how's everybody doing tonight?" It's a good thing that Jews were never into drugs, you know, because if you think about it, Jewish mothers would have made great drug pushers. You don't like the crack? Fine, don't smoke it.
Yes.
So she asks all these questions of all these moms, and so we found out about her relationship with her mother, and also the other women.
And surprisingly that she, you know, because she's a lesbian and she's way out in the public eye. And, you know, she found out that she really had a lot in common with Orthodox women that she, you know, she'd had sort of preconceived notions about. So that was kind of interesting to find out.
Mm-hmm.
So is her mom happy, sad that she became a lesbian? Did she accept her?
What is a lesbian? In the show, Rita? Did my mother come to, what'd you say?
I say, did my mother forgive me for being pregnant? No. But she accepted it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of what she does. She doesn't understand it. I think Ruth is she's 80 something years
yeah,
old
80.
When this happened. So
right.
So it was
usually I play
different.
20 year olds,
but you Don do. Wanted, I know. That's
Donald
really,
wanted me to stretch.
You gotta do a lot of age makeup.
Yeah, we do. We have to get to the theater several hours early.
Get the prosthetics on and
that's
everything.
Right.
Well, how family friendly is this show? What do
oh,
you
totally.
Think?
Totally.
Well, I think it's family friendly.
What
only,
do you think ages?
Let's
like if moms
see.
And daughters
well,
wanted
I think,
to come.
Don't you think girl like 14 year old girls and their moms?
They could probably relate to this.
Yeah.
Up to 100 years old.
Okay,
there's
only that's
only
a wide
one,
swath.
Yeah, there's only one.
There's only one little word, and she yells.
And we
it.
Won't say it.
No, heavens, no. Are you kidding me?
No, I wouldn't dream of it.
Triangle Productions 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother with Rita Parrish and Wendy Westerwell, located at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza. That's located at 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. And for reservations and tickets, you can visit tripro.org or call 503-239-5900. I left out a number. What is the number?
239-5919.
Thank you, Wendy.
You're so welcome.
You can also
honey.
Find links to Triangle and all this info. I need you to proof me before I do a show, as well as the interview at stageandstudio.org. And we have one pair of tickets to offer for February 14th, Valentine's Day, or the 15th.
Good. Donald was
I mean,
sweet
what
to
a
do
nice
that.
Thing to do.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day, 14th, or the day after Valentine's Day. A pair of tickets to the third caller. Don't call yet because here's the number. Here's the number, 503-231-8032. Hard question. What's the secret of comedy? Is
oh,
it...
You go ahead. You
I
go
mean,
first.
Absolutely, I know that.
Okay.
It has to be honest.
Yep.
If it doesn't come from me, inside of what I know, if it doesn't come from either tragedy or love or some sort of real... emotion, it is not funny.
Mm-hmm.
Being mean is not funny. Putting people down is not funny. Putting myself down and criticizing my frailties is funny if I do it with love.
If you do it with love.
And yet so much mm-hmm. of the comedy is kind of what you just said, especially stand-up. Have you both done stand-up before?
I haven't done stand-up.
Not really. I did the poetry slams, which is very similar.
But you do tons of improv.
Yeah, I do a lot of improv. So you get a lot of drunk people yelling things.
A little bit of that, yeah. Some hecklers and
some
things
hecklers.
Like that.
But what are you asking?
Well, I think, you know, I love that this is a comedy with a heart. It's a character-driven comedy
uh-huh.
as opposed to self-denigrating right. humor that women have done.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
There's none of that.
None of that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, and all these ladies really loved doing these interviews, and they were incredibly honest. The stuff they said was really moving, and so it makes the materials just right there. We don't have to do anything except just
be
tell
brilliant.
It for how it is, except be brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, when we got the script... Donald is like, I gotta say, this guy can direct like crazy.
Oh, he's been fantastic.
He directed Rose with me, and so I love it working with him because he is real about the way he goes about it. He's totally organic. He sits there with no shoes, and you know he's drinking his grapefruit juice. And
does that make him organic?
Well, I don't know what the heck, but.
It could.
He gets it at the dollar store. Anyway, we're sitting on the floor and we talk about everything. And it's a totally different way to direct.
It's relaxed.
The only other person
to
that
the
ever
point.
Directed yeah. like him was my dearest friend, Rick Young.
Oh, he that's just, quite a tribute.
You bet.
Yeah.
It's Rick and Don, and that's it. And so, it has to, there's no shtick. Even the characters that are hilarious that I do. And, you know, when we got the script, some of the characters weren't named, and we didn't really know that much about them. So we had to endow. I spent hours with Don endowing them with different traits, with how they're going to look. And I do everything with hat.
This is the first time it's been done this way, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's actually never been done since Judy.
Gold. So this is not only the Portland premiere, it's the premiere, period, outside of Judy Gold doing it.
I really hope and pray that that many, many people see it because it's so wonderful. And I'm proud of it, and I'm so proud to be on stage with Rita Parrish.
Oh.
There's nothing that isn't just delicious about her performance. I'm serious.
I think that's lovely.
I feel safe out there with her.
That's what I was going to say.
I think that's the highest compliment, if you can both trust each other that completely.
I know that whatever happened, you know, whatever were to happen, it would be just A-okay, because I got Wendy up there next to me, so everything's all right.
That's a nice feeling.
It is.
Nice feeling. And nothing bugs you about each other, right?
No.
No, not really.
Honest to God. Well, let me think. Is anything bugging me?
Let me think, Marge.
Wait, hold on a second.
Hold on, Marge.
I got to think about this. I think you have one sweater that's acrylic.
Yeah, she
that's
doesn't
upsetting.
Like that. She doesn't like my clogs. She's anti-clog.
Oh, that's it. That was the thing. I don't like the clogs.
Okay. Wendy Westerwill and Rita Parrish. It's great to visit with you today. And
thank
Brick Lugs for the rest of the run.
You're so
at
sweet,
Triangle
D.
Productions. D. That's 25 questions for a mother, and you can get more at stageandstudio.org and tripro.org. Next up, we hear from Walter Jaffe of Whitebird Dance, who's presenting the Portland debut of New Zealand's acclaimed dance company, Black Grace. They're performing Tuesday, February 19th at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. Black Grace is New Zealand's leading contemporary dance company. It has an ensemble of Samoan and Maori dancers. The choreography incorporates elements of slap dancing, which includes speaking and singing and slapping their bodies. I talk with Whitebird's Walter Jaffe about Black Grace, and we'll also hear music from the show.
The thing that is unusual and certainly remarkable about Black Grace is that Neil Aramea, who is the artistic director and founder of the company, fuses ceremonial movement, mostly Samoan. It's the company members are mostly Samoan and Pacific Islander as opposed to Maori, although there were a few Maori performers in there too. But it's this fusion of ceremonial movement, culturally specific movement, and contemporary dance, which makes it feel less traditional. It's not folk dance in any way, but there are elements of it. Each performance does have traditional haka movement, ceremonial movement in there, which of course is very exciting, such as slap dancing, very athletic. They look like rugby players, soccer players, wrestlers. And the thing that is so amazing is just to watch these strong men, and in some cases you might even consider them a little bit heavy, do this incredible movement, whether it's athletic or lyrical. They basically can do anything. And the women, too. It's certainly dance as near athleticism as possible, as near as athletic, sports athletic form as you can imagine. And this is what's so appealing to us and to, I'm sure, the audience that will see Black Grace when we present them on February 19th at the Schnitzer.
And so that's what made you want to bring them here?
Yes. We've been actually looking at the company for quite a while, and then for one reason or another, it's just taken us a while because it has been 10 years since we saw the company. And we just have seen more of the company since then. We've seen really how the contemporary movement has developed so well because maybe initially we thought the unique quality of the company lies in the athleticism rather than the contemporary choreography. But now it's merged so well and it's so well done that we thought it's time that we brought the company to Portland.
Well, I was wondering how unusual, because you and Paul see so many different dances throughout the year and for many years since you've started Whitebird. And even before that, how unusual is it? You talked about the unusual body types, but also the movement is unusual and the fact that they vocalize.
In contemporary dance, now you hear more dancers speaking, more vocalizing, more making all kinds of sounds, grunting sounds, whatever. I guess if Paul and I have a preference, we prefer movement as opposed to talking. I mean, otherwise we'd be doing theater. But dance and theater is merging now, so that often the dancers are performers. They're not even called dancers anymore. They're called performers because they can do many different things. So it's not so unusual, but it's typical of the quality of Black Grace, of the sort of the Samoan movement, the sounds of the body, the sounds of the voice that supplement the action, the choreography. This is very typical and it's appropriate for what they do. So it makes it even more unusual and unique.
How much did you find that the educational system here in Portland knew about indigenous cultures, and how did you prepare them for this concert?
Honestly, we weren't so aware, except that every year this is our 13th year, we do what we call an outreach project with the Portland Public School System, inspired by a dance company that we present. when we suggested Black Grace, a company from New Zealand, the core group of teachers we work with were absolutely thrilled because they say they rarely get an opportunity, if ever, to teach about New Zealand, its culture, its history. And the whole concept of indigenous cultures, of course, is very relevant today throughout the world, but particularly in Portland, which is seen somewhat as a white city. The indigenous cultures, indigenous is what the term is used in Australia and in New Zealand. It's also used in Canada. It's not used so much in the United States, but they're talking about culturally specific groups of people, whether it's Native American, it's Inuit, it's Aboriginal in Australia, or it's Maori, Samoan, etc. So this was tremendously appealing to the teachers to do a focus on this. And what they've created is which is typical, is a multidisciplinary curriculum for Portland Public Schools. It meets all the benchmarks of the public school system, is put online, and it's now currently being taught to close to 3,000 students in grades 6 through 12. This will all culminate in a free student performance on February 20th, which is the day after the public performance in the evening, at the Schnitzer, for over 2,700 students and teachers who are participating in the curriculum. And as soon as the word got out, we sent out a general announcement. Actually, we have someone coordinating the whole curriculum. Even before the official word got out, but it's sort of the word leaked out that we're doing this about New Zealand and bringing Black Grace, a New Zealand company, the attendance just shot up, and basically the whole Schnitzer got literally sold out fast. We have close to 3,000, as they say, students and teachers participating in this curriculum, which is astounding, and it's going to be exciting, of course.
It is astounding that there was such a positive response to that.
Yes.
Why did you think Portland audiences would like Black Grace?
I think Portland audiences, based on the different companies we bring a lot of companies that, again, the term is culturally specific, relating to specific cultures, and that can be, of course, African American, it can be Taiwanese, it can be Vietnamese, and so on. The audiences really seem to appreciate seeing dancers, performers from countries other, and experiencing people other than from their own experience. And we find that extremely encouraging because, again, Portland is often seen as predominantly a white city. Now, there's an Office of Equity that Mayor Sam Adams, previous Mayor Sam Adams, established. And there is really a mandate now by the city to basically diversify throughout every aspect of our lives here in Portland. We bring diversification on stage, and it's largely through the performances that we bring. But we also have interaction. One of the things about the curriculum is that we also do in-class workshops where we bring these artists from different backgrounds into the schools, and they do workshops, and they get to meet, or the kids get to meet them up close up and personal. So it's also another aspect of this. But we think it's going to be, we know that this is a very exciting opportunity to have this company of basically Samoan, Maori people who really have never visited Portland before come to Portland and experience not only our evening audience, but also these kids. It's going to be a unique opportunity for them.
Was it difficult to arrange getting them for Whitebird? Were there a lot of hoops that you had to go through?
They were going to be in Seattle, and we just worked ourselves into the tour. We are actually launching the tour. They're arriving from Auckland on a Saturday evening and then rehearsing on the following Tuesday, which is we're moving into the theater on February 19th, and then the performance is that evening. So we're not giving them a whole lot of time to get ready, but they'll be fine. They're used to doing that. And then the student show is on the 20th at noon, and they literally then drive themselves up or get themselves up to Seattle for performances at the end of that week. And then that begins a 3 to 4 week tour of the U.S.
And that was Black Grace, presented by Whitebird at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, Tuesday, February 19th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets available at whitebird.org or 1-800-380-3800. 3516. And you can get that info at stageandstudio.org. We have a pair of tickets to offer for a KBOO membership or renewal of $60 or more. Call now at 503-231-8032 for a pair of tickets to Whitebird for a KBOO membership or renewal of $60 or more. Before we go today, I just wanted to let you know that Philip Can Gatanda, a playwright, Asian-American playwright, will be at Reed College February 22nd, 4:30 p.m. at Psychology 105. And you can find out more at reed.edu/aloud. Before we go today, one more final thing I'd like to play. Back in 1994, I had the privilege of working with former Oregon Symphony conductor James DePriest. He lent his beautiful voice to introduce my very first radio series, Legacies, Tales from America.
Welcome, I'm James DePriest. There are things handed down to us like old heirlooms, which have a definite form and shape you can't ignore. And there are other legacies that are as light as air and as deep as breath.
Light as air and as deep as breath, the legacy of James DePriest will be remembered in Portland and the world. Conductor, poet, and beloved community member, James DePriest gave Portland his talent, spirit, and vibrancy. Over the weekend, he died from complications of a massive heart attack. He was 76. I send condolences to his wife and family. He will be missed. And more sadness from the other side of the world. I did a piece about the Fisherman's Friends last year in Cornwall, and member Trevor Grills of Fisherman's Friends passed away today in an accident that also took the life of their manager. I'd like to play one song as a tribute to them by Fisherman's Friends. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
Come all jolly fellows who delight in being mellow, attend unto me and be easy. For a pint when it's quiet, come lads, let us try it. Dull thinking will drive a man crazy.
I have lawns, I have bars, I have fruit, I have flowers, and the lark is my morning alarmer. So my jolly boys now is to run to the plough, long life and success to the farmer.
KBOO Radio is a proud sponsor of the 23rd Cascade Festival of African Films, Africa Through African Lenses. The film festival will take place February 1st through March 2nd, 2013, Thursday through Saturdays each week. The majority of films were made by African directors and celebrate Africa's achievements, expose Africa's failures, and reveal the possibilities of change and a more hopeful future. More information on the Festival of African Films can be found at kboo.fm/CFAF23.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Pink Martini, playing Portland's Edgefield and Ben's Les Schwab Amphitheater this summer. Pink Martini tickets available this Friday at Ticketfly.com. Steve Miller Band also playing both venues.
You're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio. Yeah!
Andy Warhol lets us scream, hang him on my wall.
Good morning. Thanks so much for listening to Art Focus. My name is Ava Lake, and I have with me today Michelle Ross. So excited today to have this show and this guest. Michelle, thanks so much for joining me.
You're very welcome. Fun to be here.
So I think what we're basically going to be talking about is a show that you are in at the Museum of Contemporary Craft, and then we can maybe add some other stuff along with it. You're in a group show that is a... It's a group of artists that are all receiving the fellowship from the Ford Family Foundation, the Hallie Ford Fellowship. Yes?
That's correct.
That's correct. And this fellowship, for those who don't know, you've got to be a mid-career artist. What else do you have to be?
Well, I don't think it's official, but I have deduced, and many of the other artists that I know in town have deduced, that it helps, certainly, if you've been an instructor or an educator in some way, because Hallie Ford, whose bequeath the fellowship is, was an art educator. And I think out of the 9 current ones, all of them, I could be wrong about, there may be one or two that's not, but have had, you know, you had a role in academia here in Portland or in the, you know,
in the
Oregon,
state.
The state, in the area. So that is something that may change in the next 2 years. There's 2 more years of
the
fellowship funding, and it may go on from there. There's been some discussion about that, but yeah.
And yes, to your artists out there, you can apply if you meet the requirements, and the deadline is March 15th, and you can, I'm sure if you Google Ford Family Foundation, the fellowship, you can find out more information about it. The show that's up right now, let's see, We Tell Ourselves Stories in Order to Live?
Correct.
That's the name of the title. And this is from a Joan Didion book?
It's a quote. I actually am not familiar with the book. It's from a book, I believe it's called The White Album, that she wrote. And we all met with Cassandra Koblenz, who is the curator, she's a LA-based independent curator, and she's wonderful, and she sort of built the framework for the show around this quote, which was really interesting for me, because one of the first things she asked me in my studio, there are interviews that she did with us that I think will eventually be posted on the Museum of Contemporary Craft website. But the first question out of the gate was, what's your relationship with narrative and storytelling? And coming up,